Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 423 on Comedy Central, starting on October 21st after Colbert at midnight, Monday through Thursdays. That's my show. That's a new show that I got. It's sort of a fake game show that where comedians come on and we make fun of shit that we found on social media in a fake game show format. It's a game show in the sense that they are competing, but it's sort of fake in the sense that it's not like Price is Right, where people are competing for fabulous prizes. They're competing for the preservation of their own egos, which is a much more valuable prize to a comedian than a dinette set. So that's at midnight, starting October 21st after Colbert. Please give it a shot. This episode of the podcast is Marky Ramone and Andrew W.K., who have been touring together.
Sure are.
Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Chris.
Where'd you come from?
I was hiding over in the corner.
In my dreams.
Yeah. And now I'm going to get into your car since I left your dreams.
Beep, beep. Yeah. Billy Ocean, yeah. I found out, very big in England still.
Really?
That's what I hear.
Oh.
SiriusXM doesn't lie.
That gives me hope for society.
But we're not here to talk about a Billy Ocean concert at the Fonda Theater tonight,
we
October
sure
15th. We're here to talk about Marky Ramone's Blitzkrieg, which is essentially where Marky Ramone has Andrew W.K., and they're doing, what was it, like 35 Ramone songs or something like that?
Just in a row.
That's at the Fonda Theater, so if you go to fondatheater.com, then you can get tickets for that.
And you should go do that, because that's insane.
That's going to be an insane show.
Yeah, that's head exploding. That's two awesome things crashing into each other into headbanging goodness.
And so we did the podcast with them yesterday. We recorded this kind of early in the morning. One of the things I love about doing the podcast is just the turns that happen in a show where because we just don't know where the conversation's going to go. And then you just start peeling back layers and I don't know. I'm sort of I don't mind sounding pretentious for a half a second. I'm sort of a student of humanity, Kyle. And it's sort of fun to, because, you know, I haven't figured shit out yet. And it's kind of fun to dissect people in the sense of figure out how they do things and why they do
that
things.
It got deep.
It got deep and
super
fun.
Super deep.
Like a deep party.
Oh, yeah. Like a philosophical party.
Yeah.
Just like philosophers, but partying. And
maybe we should stop talking about it now. I can't help it. It's the after show in me. Oh, so many after shows. I gotta break shit down. After we stop this, we're gonna talk about something and we gotta break it down just to scratch that itch for me.
Oh, I like it.
I really appreciate that. Here's the Nerds Podcast, episode number 423 with Marky Ramone and Andrew W.K.
Party!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You guys came in very early this morning.
We're punctual.
There you go.
We appreciate it.
Ah, thank you.
How are you doing?
We're doing very well.
Good. How's your voice?
It's doing fine. How's yours?
It is okay.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, we've covered that.
All right.
What are you guys doing? You're doing a show tomorrow night?
Yeah.
We're at the Ford Theater.
Henry Fonda.
It's the Fonda Theater.
Music Box, Henry Fonda.
Music Box.
Whatever they call it this week.
Yeah. It seems it's changed like a few times in the past decade.
I think it's Fonda, Henry Fonda, and the other things. Yes. I wonder if it's family related, though.
Oh.
You know, Fonda, Henry Fonda, you know.
How many Fondas are there?
Well, there's Jane, Peter, right?
Yeah.
Henry.
And then that's it. There's no one else in the family. I think it's just those three.
I'm not sure. Maybe it's probably like grandkids.
So what's the show? What's the show that you guys are you guys doing?
Doing 35 classic Ramone songs.
35?
Yep. And it's been going great all over the world.
That's good. Great.
Russia, China, Europe, South America, France, Germany, Spain, and all that stuff. And New York City, we just did really well, Irving Plaza, and now we're here.
Who has the best audiences country-wise, and who has the, well, they seem to be enjoying the show, but they're just kind of polite.
They're all different. Japan.
They're very polite.
They're very polite. Japan, definitely. Every country is different. You know, the way they react. You know, the way their traditions are and everything.
I remember watching like concert footage growing up of just every show, and it seemed like Europe, like it's like they stomp a lot or they just clap a lot. In
Europe?
Yeah.
Well, they like to slam dance. You know, they're into that, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
Spitting, slam dancing. But hey, that's their way of showing appreciation.
Yeah, yeah. That's got. And I wonder if that will end up kind of like losing some of its, you know, because of the internet, everyone being aware of what everyone else is doing. Or, you know, it's like, you know, when you would go to different areas, like you would see the different types of like punk or the different types of rock and the type of like, influence it had. And it's like, oh, well, you know, there used to be that thing where it's like, oh, LA guys, they dance like this, or like Chicago guys.
It's all different.
Yeah.
All different.
And I wonder if that, like, as we continue to kind of like be aware of what everyone else is doing, if that's going to, everything's going to start evening out across the world.
It all gets generalized.
Yeah.
Is this begun?
Yes. Oh, okay. We started it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't sure if there was a formal beginning.
That is not an uncommon question.
Okay. It's very casual to just stumble into it right in. Yeah,
we're loosey. We're loosey goosey.
So how long was it recording before you guys got here? Okay. Okay.
No, just the last 4 minutes.
All right.
Why did you?
No, I was just curious. I mean, I've been on, you know, you never know how someone produces the program. Sometimes there's an official introduction or a start, and sometimes
we are unfortunately, and maybe this is not so great for the guests, we are horrendously understructured. We sit down, we have a conversation. You know, the conversation goes for a little while, and then when
I mean, should we explain who's here or who's on the show?
Well, everyone knows.
Well, that'll happen. You'll do an intro.
Yeah, we'll tell a little intro, and I'll say Andrew WK's here, Mark Ramone's here, and then
you never know.
And then here's the show that they're doing, and then it just sort of it fades up with us just mid conversation. Yeah, we're just chatting,
and I'm pretty sure they're going to be able to tell the difference in your voices.
Yes,
the Brooklyn accent. Marky sounds exactly like Marky Ramone.
Can't hide the Brooklyn accent.
Yeah.
But I'm always, but I want to try to learn from you how to not blow out my voice, because you manage to not blow out your voice, and there must be something. There must be. Are there exercises?
Warming up is good, and you know, obviously early in the morning before you've spoken a lot, you're going to sound a little different than you would later in the day. So it always helps to just you know, the worst thing for me is sleeping right before a show. And then going right on stage. I think that just being awake and active is helpful. But I wouldn't actually would ask you for advice really more, because you use your voice in all these different ways, you know, beyond one particular delivery. Like I'm usually just singing or screaming, you know, sort of at a full tilt. There's also just speaking and then doing, you know, more nuanced voices for a character or something like that. And then obviously a podcast would be different from television, or maybe not. I would actually like to know your approach.
I don't have one. It's bad.
Well, it's working then.
Talking is the worst thing you can do for your voice. Basically, talking is the worst.
Okay.
And so that is what I do. Like especially if you have to sing at a show, you really shouldn't talk at all during the day. You kind of just one or the other.
I just goggle.
With coffee?
I just goggle. Any liquid.
I saw George Carlin once, and like he lost his place in a show, and then like took a sip of his drink. It was just this big thing of like just brown stuff, and then some guy went like woo, and he was like, no, fuck you, it's not booze. And then he explained that he was once talking, he was having trouble like doing, you know, shows after, you know, two a night for a long time, that he was losing his voice, and he talked to an opera singer who says, oh, you need room temperature flat Coca-Cola. He says like something about like just, you just drink that, and like it's kind of a temporary fix where just kind of the you know, the syrup or the, you know, sugar just kind of coats your vocal cords and kind of heals them temporarily.
Yeah. Oh, apple cider vinegar.
Really? We were talking about vinegar.
Yeah, last night.
Apple cider vinegar unfiltered, that shit will fit. Like if you're starting to get a cold or whatever, it also cures acid reflux.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And why is that? Because it seems so acidic.
Definitely. Yeah.
It seems like the opposite thing. If I had, you know, that feeling of bile reaching up the back of my throat, I would never think, oh, drink a bunch of vinegar, then I'll feel better. But you're saying it neutralizes acid even more than dairy or calcium?
It does. I'm going to say something the internet's probably going to correct me on, but I believe vinegar is alkaline. Is that correct? Anyone? Good.
Probably.
Let's go with that. It might not be scientifically accurate, but let's just say that you can't argue with results.
Well, maybe it's you reach a tipping point where it's so acidic that your body can't get any more acidic, so you kind of come out the other way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if someone is hyperactive, they'll take speed basically, and it calms them down.
Yeah.
So maybe the body, if you just max out the acid,
it's like throat speed.
Yeah.
It's basically like throat speed.
I did see a dude do that once. I did see a dude smoke speed and then curl up for a nap. And it was the way it was.
Where did you see that?
On my couch.
Why did someone smoke speed on your couch?
Because I was in San Pedro.
Okay, that's what it was.
Where else?
Yeah.
That's what it was. Okay, yeah. That's all you had to say.
Yeah. Just but like he like brought out his pipe, smoked it, and then like a little kid just kind of smelling.
Okay.
And just kind of curled up.
Anytime you tell a story like that, I'll just parenthetically assume one time in San Pedro.
Yes. And I always assume. If it's speed of San Pedro, if it's coke, it's Hollywood. If it's
when you
heroin,
see that sign on the highway, you're going to think about that.
Yeah, every time.
A situation.
110 South? Speed.
SP.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. SP. Speed up and have a nap.
Speedro. That's what they call it down there.
Yeah, on the sign should say, if you lived here, you'd already be high by now. That's what they should say.
You look and you have a Minutemen tattoo.
So how's the tour? How's it been received so far? Do people naturally assume like, oh, you guys are going to be performing together, or is it been pretty cool?
I know it's been great. I mean, it definitely bridges a generation gap. You have all the older Ramones fans, and you have the young ones that are 17 to 20, 21. So they weren't around when we retired, but they want to hear the songs. So we're playing them, 35, and his delivery is great, and the music is still the way it should be, and this is the result. This is what we've been doing.
So those kids, so Adios Amigos came out in 96?
Yep.
Seven.
And they were about maybe four or five years old.
Yeah. But that's the thing about, that I've always enjoyed about, like punk in general. It's when you kind of get into it, there's all these prerequisite albums that you end up, if you find the proper guy at the record store, it's like he goes, oh, you got into punk? Well,
what's a record store?
Yeah. When you go to your favorite Spotify playlist guy or something.
Right.
You go to your favorite suggestion bot.
Yeah. But there's that thing that happens where it's like, you like this? Well, then you need to check out this. And it's always like the Ramones or the Misfits or and then as they continue, and then it turned into, Black Flag and Minor Threat, and it's a neat little quick history, and that's why I think
you mean the Misfits with Danzig.
Well, yes, with Danzig. No. The album they put out last year.
God, please. No, it's either gotta be with Danzig or Michael Graves, or there's no Misfits.
Yeah. I remember I tweeted something like I saw, because the Misfits came to Hawaii. Well, the Misfits came to Hawaii in '98. That's where I'm from, and
that was the third incarnation.
Yeah. And like I said, some guy on Twitter just probably 10 tweets at me deep, going, "How dare you say you saw the Misfits? You didn't see. It's not the Misfits without." Right. And then exactly. I was like, but I was a kid. And it was really exciting. So right. I'm sorry I didn't bring any.
Because it's
of,
in Hawaii.
Yeah,
and when no one comes to you.
No one comes to Hawaii.
It's nice.
Well, everyone's gone there because of Elvis.
Yeah, exactly.
Live in Hawaii.
Yeah, it's rare.
Was this daunting for you, or was it exciting, or how do you approach this?
Definitely both. Very, very exciting, and that was the main feeling, and obviously my motivation for wanting to be part of it, but I was also very intimidated and very nervous, and just wondered if physically I'd be able to play that many songs and do it at the level that I knew it should be done, and it's very intense music to begin with, and then to do it live. I've never really sung for any other bands except my own music, and even then I would never thought of myself as a singer. I just had to, that was sort of the task that I needed to accomplish to make the music I wanted to make. Someone had to sing it. But when Marky Ramone asks you to do something, and invites you, there was never any debate in my mind. I just had to figure out some way to rise to the occasion, and I'm extremely, extremely thankful that he gave me the chance to do it. And the best part is, the music is so good that it pulls you up to a higher level. I usually lower things by my association. The music, in this case, it pulls everybody up. It makes us possible.
Do you really think that
capable?
Do you really think that you lower stuff, or are you just...
Oh, absolutely. No,
really?
No.
Really? Why would you say that?
Well, I mean, I feel like a lot of times, for example, on this podcast, I'm now lowering the standard of the podcast. But for me, I'm being elevated, being, on a,
that's not true.
Christmas show.
Come on.
No, but I always just feel like, wow, of all the people that get the chance to do this, why me? And I feel like I'm representing a lot of people's dreams in, getting to sing with Marky, for example, or getting to do anything that we get to do, and it tries to, you know, it keeps you very thankful, but also very, you know, aware that this is a one in a million chance, you know, and don't blow it. And it's a good way to feel. I mean, it helps me do my best.
Thank you.
How much of you, when you're approaching, you know, to do these songs, to essentially cover these songs, are you looking at it as how much do you want to try to keep the sound the way that it was originally versus, well, you want to kind of bring something of yourself to it as well? Like,
well,
how
that's what
he
does.
Find that balance?
That's what he does. I didn't want any clones. So Andrew delivers his vocals the way he is. He doesn't, you know, he's not trying to copy Joey. I mean, everyone's different. No one, there's not going to be another Joey. So Andrew does it his way. That's what I wanted. And he definitely engages the audience really well, and that's important.
That's great.
I mean, again, the music is so strong and so demanding. It's almost like saying, okay, I'm going to sprint as fast as I can. Now, should I sprint in this style, or should I try to emulate this person's style? When you're giving all that you have, it kind of just happens how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you don't really make a choice of how to go all out. Like, if you're going to go all out, it's just going to emerge in a very primal way. And again, the songs kind of take care of it. If I just sort of sing the best I can, you know, what happens, happens, really. I mean, I don't think I could try to sing it any other way. It just takes everything you have, and then what you're left with is hopefully enjoyable.
Definitely.
Is it sort of nice for you in the sense of, you know, I don't know, does there feel like, I don't want to say closure, but because it's not over, but does it sort of feel like, you know, wow, I get to do these songs again, and it feels really good being up here? Does it, like, what is the experience like for you?
Well, I like to see the generation gap come together. You have the older fans and the younger fans, and that's what this music does. It's the musical content, the lyrical content, and it's the energy level of the songs which youth can relate to. So that's what we're getting. And I enjoy it because I want to keep the music alive, and I feel the songs are too good not to be played.
Yeah.
So, you know, the younger generation that, again, didn't see the Ramones the first time, at least they're hearing the music properly, and it's 2013.
Yeah.
So it's a whole new generation.
Are you doing, are the sets the same, or it's like just the, like you know, one song
two,
ends,
three,
one,
four,
two, three, four?
Very quick, no talking about the weather or your grandmother. Or
you know. Which he's known for.
Right. No, it's straight through, and you know, that's the way.
Yeah.
Do it.
Does the pinhead make an appearance?
Oh, no, we're not going to rely on visuals like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's just about the music.
But, you know, one guy came on stage, and he had the pinhead on and the outfit, and it's like, okay, go do your thing.
Yeah.
And then he just got off the stage and said goodbye.
Oh, very polite.
I mean, that was unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, you know, no in-depth conversation about anything, but just, bye, see you, thank you for letting me be the pinhead, see you. And he runs off, you know.
Never to be
very
seen.
Professional.
Yeah,
professional,
very, very, yeah, very professional.
Well, there's something about, like, you know, if music is written to try to catch a trend, then obviously it kind of dies with the times, but if music is written purely about an emotional experience of a certain, you know, like whatever someone's going, I just feel like that's, every generation is going to catch that. Because a whole new generation of young people are going to hear that and be like, oh, fuck, I identify with that because that's how I feel. And it sort of, you know, breaks the mold of everything.
Yeah, you know, it's like people don't change. Technology does. You know, people confront the same situations in life. You know, the siblings, school, what they're going to do in their future, boyfriend, girlfriend stuff and all that. So, I mean, the lyrical content basically compared to then to now is same.
Yeah.
But now everyone has a cell phone.
Oh my God. It must be, are the shows just lit up like lanterns?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now I can see where they're going.
I mean, you're watching a show out of a little screen like that where you have the option to watch it normally and like, you know. I don't get it.
Why pay to go to a show if you're going to put your face on your phone?
It's just very strange.
I feel the same way. Yeah, like being at like a Hollywood Bowl show and like
it's
like
see the whole thing.
Yeah, but like I find myself my eyes going towards the screen and I go, "What's the fucking point then?"
I know. The little thing like that, and you got this beautiful big stage.
Yeah.
But I guess you know a lot of people just wanted you know to remember
I guess, but
the moment.
Yeah. I think the live tweet is sort of the death of good. You know, it's like, can you just experience a thing without having to put your face down and say something every 2 seconds? And I say this as someone who's on Twitter a lot, and I think eventually what'll happen is people will start embracing the idea of, like, you know, you'll start seeing advertisements that's like, no technology at the show. Like, you have to leave your phone and focus on the show.
I'm at obviously I fly, like, you're at airports, people taking photos of you, and they think you don't know they're doing it. You know what I mean? They're like, you know, looking up. And so I go up to the guy and go, look, why don't you get someone to take a photo of us together? Wouldn't you like you to be in the photo? I mean, obviously, you know who I am. Let's do that together. Okay. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you don't have to be a sneak. Yeah. You know, it's an invasion of privacy, really.
I guess in that case, yeah, it is kind of.
I mean, I'll sign autographs, take photos, but tell me.
Yeah.
You know? So,
Andrew, I have a question for you.
All right.
How much of your... So people must have an idea of who they think you are because of who they see on stage. Is that you off stage? Or did you have a little private piece that's like, you know, what's the difference between the two?
Do you really get wet?
Well, definitely. I mean,
oh, definitely.
Very sweaty. It takes a lot of physical effort to do anything, you know, these days, I guess. So there's different skills you call upon for different levels of effort and different tasks. And, for example, right now I could try to sing my answer or scream it or run around while doing so and headbang it. And it might be fun for the folks in the room. Since there's no cameras, no one would actually be able to appreciate it beyond the room. But, you know, just like if I call my mom, I'm going to have a different, I guess, end result I'm hoping to accomplish from that task. And we'll use the skills of trying to sound as sweet and sober to her as possible. And then there's other moments when, you know, I draw upon different skills. So I don't think there's any real person or real personality. It's just different times and different ways of behaving for different moments, you know?
I guess, but I just think of like Chuck Norris. And how Chuck Norris had to go around with a bodyguard because people were always like, I could kick that guy's ass.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like when people see you as like, oh, he's the party guy and he does this and he's a rock guy. You know, like they think that you're in that mode all the time.
Well, I absolutely am. I mean, there's just different applications for it. I mean, the state of mind is to be glad you're not dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Basically, that's to me the party's mindset is to celebrate the fact that we're here at all. And then just, you know, there's many different ways to use that opportunity, and there's many different kinds of energy that it can conjure up. But fortunately, you know, the vibe that we put out, that Marky puts out, that all of our efforts that you guys put out, it's a good vibe. And so most people that we interact with are just friendly and cheerful and have a good vibe as well.
Well,
most of them.
I think are you still doing motivational speaking?
Yeah, well, lectures and things, yeah.
That's really cool. That's probably one of my favorite things. When I heard that you were doing that, I kind of thought, well, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, in a sense, music is sort of a form of motivational speaking.
Absolutely, yeah. The feeling that you want to get, the feeling that I get from it was uplifting and cheerful. But I also realized that, I guess almost through doing more interviews like this and talking, that just conversation can sometimes conjure up those same types of, I don't know, feelings of possibility, of inspiration, of motivation, you know, again, just to be aware that you're not dead. And there are people, believe it or not, I know it's hard for us to imagine, that don't listen to loud music or don't get a good feeling at all from music, really. They have no connection, but they might get it from reading or they might get it, like, from a conversation. So I'd meet people that said they saw some interview or read something that connected with them, and I figured, well, why should they be left out of the party? We can you know, get through to them and get them a good feeling, you know, through some other means. So my main goal is to get that kind of energetic feeling also for myself. You know, I want to be cheered up and motivated and feel good. So try to spread it around as many different ways as possible.
And so what is the underlying theme of the – like what do you want to motivate people to do? Is it to do things or feel things or have a better life? Or what is it that you want?
I don't know. It's mainly just to hang out and talk and party. And most people seem to enjoy that as much as I do. So.
Well, it's like, you know, if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That's true. My life is proof that dreams – can come true and that very unlikely adventures can take place.
Yeah, it's the film, the movie The Edge with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins,
yeah.
Where he says all the way throughout the movie, what one man can do, another man can do.
Is that where they're in the prison or something?
No, they're in the woods.
Oh, okay.
Which is like an outdoor prison without
the biggest
walls.
Prison.
Yeah. Set of bars.
And there was a bear, which they also have in prison.
Bear. Yeah. you got to have the bear.
But it's just the idea. Staple. I mean, that is absolutely true when people say, like, how do you do what you do? Like, I don't know. I figured it out. Anyone can do it. You know, like, you just create a certain set of circumstances and, you know, get a little bit of luck and you could do it too.
Anyone can do what they want, what they're meant to do. You know, and that, figuring that out and having it align with your desires is maybe the harder part of believing that it's possible. But, you know, I would never tell someone to do exactly what I do or do anything that someone else is doing, but to do what they really want. And, you know, finding out what that is can even be the most complicated part of all. I think so much has been set up, I don't know, by bad influences, but just influences in society and life in general to tell us that it would never even occur to you to think about wanting to do anything, you know, beyond survive. But, you know, we're very lucky in this day and age, and for most of us, to have a lot of the crucial aspects of life taken care of to some degree, so then we can indulge in, you know, things beyond food and shelter, basically.
Yeah, well, people definitely have this sort of it's almost like this internal director monologue that where they go, oh, I'd want to do this, and it goes, oh, you can't do that. And they go, okay, I guess I can't do that.
Right.
Not realizing that you don't have to listen to that, but I think it's important to remind people that you can ask your brain questions. If your brain says, no, you can't do that, then you can go, why couldn't I do that? Or how could I do that?
Hopefully you're just, you know, you're propelled or drawn or pulled towards something that makes you feel good and just have the courage to actually do it, you know, more than once.
Yeah.
You know, do it over and over and over again. But even if you get to do it once, that's better than none. Just never assume that it's not possible because, you know, we've seen too many examples of very unlikely dreams coming true and very unlikely adventures taking place to believe that it's not possible. It absolutely is. In fact, that's the way the world is set up to work. I think it's just it's so hard to, you know, fully fathom it.
Well, a lot of times people can't get out of their own fucking way. Like, yeah. you cannot get out of your own way to do the things that you think that you want to do.
It's tricky.
Well, you know, it all stems back to also to grandma and grandpa and mother and father. My son, the doctor, the lawyer, you know what I mean? Can't do anything else, just that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's because it's been ingrained in society.
Yeah.
How did you get the wherewithal to think you could do what you're doing, like drumming?
I just didn't listen to anyone. You know, you look at them and you go, why are they telling me this, you know? So it's up to the individual.
Was there a time when you realized that you were going to live this way forever?
Yeah, when I was about 12. 12 years old, you know? I didn't get much from school. I didn't think there was anything there that could really help me. You know.
And you found music?
Thank God. You know, because all the hypocrisy and bullshit. She's the line.
No, you can say whatever you want.
And all the bullshit out there that, you know, especially stuff they teach in school. You know, it's baloney. So music was more of a realistic view of my point to the path that I wanted to take.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you feel like, are you good at handling success, both of you?
You have to be you. You can't live this rock star lifestyle and come off like you're better than anyone else, or that, no, I'm not going to sign any autographs, I'm not taking any photos with you. If you have that attitude, then you're going to lose your fans and friends, because those are the people that got you where you are. And it sounds cliche, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know? So when you stop acting yourself, then you're going to have problems.
Yeah. But I think that was – would you say that was sort of the underlying thing that sort of built the community around like the Ramones? I mean, you guys are coming out of this era where there's like arena rock and the band is up there and you're fucking way back there. But then with you guys, you're in it. You're there down with people playing right there.
Right, CBGB's, Max's, Kansas City, in New York in 74 – we finally had a place to play. I mean, I was in another band at the time with Richard Hell and the Voidoids, but anyway, I mean, our competition was the stadium rock and all that stuff and disco, But the camaraderie that we had with the bands that started punk, like Talking Heads, Television, the Ramones, obviously, Blondie, and the Heartbreakers, the Dolls, it was a small community. So, yeah, you were right about that stadium stuff. You know, we were a lot closer to our fans in that environment.
Well, so all those bands that you mentioned, was it interesting for you to see how everyone sort of sprouted off and kind of their own?
Yeah, everyone was different. I mean, the Ramones didn't sound like Blondie. Blondie didn't sound like Talking Heads. But, you know, we were all hoping that that one thing, you know, the musical combination of people would advance.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just only 250 to 300 people in CBGBs. So you wanted to be accepted in Europe, all over the world, you know, which it finally did.
But I think when you, with all those bands that you mentioned, I think when people look back, they go, oh, yeah, the Ramones were punk, but I don't think most people now would go, oh, Blondie was, you know, punk, or Talking Heads came out of the, you know, like that scene.
Yeah, they were different. They were more, the Talking Heads were more like a, now they would be called, I guess, what, nerd rock or nerdy or whatever. but good songs. Very good songs. Yeah. I don't consider them a punk band.
No.
That Blondie is more of a 60s girl group influence kind of thing, you know, with a sense of humor. So, but they have great songs, and then they went disco, which garnered them a lot of hits. So more power to them. But the Ramones, we stuck to our guns.
Yeah.
We didn't change. We didn't do anything. We just stayed on that path.
Yeah. How are you? Well, obviously, if you're a motivational speaker, you must be pretty good with success. Or do you struggle with it? Or is it?
Well, I don't feel very successful yet. So that was what I was asking Marky. Like, when did he realize this wasn't going to – his life was going to go down this path? It's all still very baffling to me that any of this has happened. And it's only been a few years where I've realized, wow, maybe this really is just – not going to stop, because there's been so much beyond my own self. I also, like what Marky was saying, so many other people have given me these chances. So many opportunities were ones I could never have dreamed up or even set out to have for myself. So there seems to be this outside influence, outside forces, and outside people beyond yourself that are responsible for the life that you're getting to have. So I just feel like the only way I'll ever be able to feel like it's a success maybe is, you know, at the very end, right before you die or something. Like, well, okay, I did that. But I'm just more just really amazed. That's the feeling that happens the longer I've gotten to do this. Just really, really amazed that any of this has happened, let alone that it's continuing to happen. So, I mean, I work harder each year because I feel more obligated to do so and more shocked that I had another year to do anything. You know what I mean? And you know, and seeing people who are much more skilled, much more talented, or have all these other same things to offer, and why don't they have that same chance? So you just really take it less and less for granted, which I really thought it would be the opposite. I think I would get used to things and be like, oh, yeah, this is just how it is. But it's more just shocking, almost embarrassing. Like, why does this work out this way? But the only rational way to deal with that is just to apply yourself even harder to it.
Do you feel like if you were to ever say, like, oh, I think I've reached that thing, are you afraid to ever think that because then you wouldn't put in as much effort, or you would get comfortable, or do you feel
maybe,
like...
Maybe. I've seen people that seem to approach their work that way, or their life in general, where it's... I don't have any other interests, is basically what the thing is. I see a lot of people who do have their project or their work, and whether it's being in a band, or whether it's, you know, working in something that's in the creative arts, they have their main interest, which could be, like, their family, which seems like a pretty good interest to have, or... you know, their hobbies, even like certain things like golf. And there's nothing wrong with any of this, but I don't have any other interests. There's nothing else that this is like funding for me to do. This is all it ever is. And that, I think, is what keeps it from ever feeling like it's getting older, or, oh yeah, I just wake up every day and do this thing. It's always, you know, unpredictable and strange and very pleasurable. And all my hobbies and interests were this before. I used to have jobs to be able to do this. And once you're able to do this all the time, then life gets pretty strange in a good way.
Yeah.
I think when you approach it where you just want success, it's not going to happen. You have to really hone your skills, and all that will come.
Yeah.
A lot of people go, well, I want to make a lot of money. You know, but you really have to become great at what you do to achieve that.
Right.
You know, that comes first. You know, what you want to do, then the success of money comes later.
And then the interesting question to ask people is, well, why do you want that?
Right.
And a lot of times they don't have an answer. They're like, oh, I don't know, just so I don't have to worry about anything. Like,
so I don't have to work.
I don't know if that... Yeah. Right? Yeah, so but then what?
Right.
But then you still got to do something, and then you're definitely still going to... You're going to still have responsibilities, yep, and a lot of times... just as many more responsibilities.
Yeah.
So
where it's a commodity. You're a commodity.
Yeah, and I think that success, the idea of success or failure, is not, for some reason, maybe it's just the way that our brains have to process it, but I really don't think it's as black and white as like, oh, now you're this, or oh, you didn't. I mean, it's all a process. It's a long process.
Exactly.
And it's sort of like a bit of a sine wave, and sometimes things are better, and sometimes there's a dip, and it's not really...
It's a roller coaster.
It is. Yeah. I think success is, and by the way, you definitely have it, but it's if you're able to do the thing that you love, and you don't have to do shit that you hate to survive, I think that's success.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
No matter what you do.
No matter what you do. No matter how much money you make, no matter what this, as long as... If you can be happy doing what you're doing and you don't have to, you know, obviously there are going to be some times where you go, I don't really feel like doing this. But that's different than...
It's a deeper feeling that will push you through those moments,
yes,
where it's not as enjoyable or convenient. No, I that is a great way to look at it, just that when you can fully apply yourself to something, even actually doing the parts that maybe are painful or less than comfortable, there's a satisfaction in even having something to push up against like that, to have a reason to give everything you have, that's like the best feeling of all. You know, even if it amounts to nothing other than that you just did that.
Yeah.
You know, you could run a marathon and no one knows that you ran it, but if you know that you gave everything you had to something, and to really know that, because when I sing with Marky, I know at that end of the show I could not have given any more energy. You know what I mean? And that is there's a pleasure. And it's not a satisfying kind of contentment. It's like the sense of, wow, well, you know, if I had to die right now, I'll go out on this is a high note. Even if it's just for me, just to know that you have that chance to give yourself to something, you know.
Well, and you also know that there are those shows where even if by the crowd's reaction the show went well, but if you didn't do what you feel like you could have done, then you're like, fuck.
That's one of those,
like,
yeah.
Oh, no, the show was great. No, I know, but I should have.
That's those funny band things,
too. It's a war.
It's a constant war.
It's a war. You have
there's
to
different
be,
perspectives.
You always have to be, if there's only one person in the audience, you have to make believe it's 10,000.
Yeah.
You have to give it all you got because there's somebody else out there that will.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And also, you know, well, especially going back to the look, if there's, you know, 10 people there and not that you guys have to worry about this anymore, but if there's only 10 people there, it's not their fault that 1,000 people didn't show up.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. Well, I say, well, we're not coming back here anymore, you know,
yes,
but you can't do that. You
yeah.
know, they came to see you and you got to perform.
Yeah.
I just did a show like this the other day where for whatever reason, just I think the way it was advertised, there were only about 10 people there. And it was in a big room. This wasn't with Marky. This was my own show. And it was, you know, I was disappointed and felt, you know, discouraged and a bit embarrassed, which I don't feel that ashamed by either because I really, you know, you try to bolster yourself and feel very invincible, but you also have to be open enough to care that you're, you know, offering a good thing and that people want to see it. So it always can be kind of a bummer. But what I really realized at this show, and I played, the show was actually really great and we played really well. The people in that front row, the 10 people that were there, they don't see the empty room behind
yeah.
them. All they see is the stage and the show is happening. So to them, there might as well be 1,000 people behind them. I mean, maybe the cheering is a different volume level. But from my own experiences seeing shows, nothing else mattered except what was happening right then. And it might as well have been, you know, the amount of impact that the show had on me. It was enough. I could have represented 10,000 people in my excitement for seeing the band that, you know, maybe was playing to just me that night. So always remember, too, like, you never know how it's going to go down, and for the people that are there, it could be the best show that they've ever seen, you know.
And a lot of times it can be a really special experience. Like, oh my god, I get to see it. It's almost like they feel like it's a private, like a private show,
private event.
Yeah, right.
Band for hire,
personal private event.
And that's where you can. I did a show once in Atlanta, and like there were like 10 people there. This is a few years ago. And my first thought was like, no one wants to come to see me. I can't lose any tickets. And I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And maybe it's the wrong. You know, just go through that whole thing.
Of course.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. And so I put a chair up on stage and I brought them up one by one and basically just interviewed them for as the show.
And you'll remember that show more than many others.
Exactly.
Probably,
right? And you know, like it really was a special. And I'm so glad that happened so that we could have that experience. And so it was like just a really fun little community. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
And you didn't stop. I mean, that's the main thing. You want to have a variety, a texture of flavors and experiences and moods and emotions. And that's one of the great things about this kind of work, this creative work, is you really get to explore all those different feelings. This reminded me of another show that I'll never forget. There was a show we played on the Ozfest Festival. Again, it's my band years in 2002. Where for whatever reason, we actually had to go on stage before the doors even opened. And this was around 9 a.m. in the morning. It's a, you know, outdoor festival.
Great
all day
time
long.
For music.
Wonderful.
And it was in the Gorge, you know, outside Seattle in Washington, which is a beautiful venue. You're playing in, looks like, you know, the Grand Canyon. And literally you could see the people lined up, you know, a mile away, standing at the gate that's closed.
They're all tailgating with coffee.
We just, you know, and it wasn't their fault. But we still played, and I actually just ran around the field with a really long mic cable and just sort of used up as much space as I could. I think there was two people literally that were just actually working at the festival. They weren't even, you know, ticket buyers. But I'll never forget that was one of the more memorable shows of all time, just to play before the place is even open.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it also comes down to people get well, you know, as performers, our egos are fragile sometimes, you know, because you put yourself out there a little bit. And you still want to feel like what you're doing, people are getting it or appreciating it. But I think, you know, everyone kind of has this pre-programmed mission statement in their head before they do something, and maybe they don't realize it. But I think as a performer, if your mission statement is like, I want to go out there so people will love me, that is a very dangerous mission statement to have, as opposed to, hey, I want people to leave my show feeling better than when they got it. I want people to have fun.
They were entertained.
Exactly. Then it doesn't fucking matter how many people are there.
There you go.
And then any situation, no matter what, you can turn into something positive if that's kind of your mission.
It's a strange dichotomy, like you mentioned with ego, because it's simultaneously this feeling of being on top of the world, and you're on the stage and the spotlight and the people are here and they're excited to see you and excited about what you're doing. So you have this big rush of confidence, and then it's also the most vulnerable, humiliating, you know, devastating, potentially heart-wrenching experience to put yourself in front of anybody. You know, to offer anyone anything is very vulnerable. So it's that push and pull of feeling on top of the world and just feeling also completely just like the worst, you know, very, very intense, frightening feelings. But, you know, I'm definitely drawn to that intensity because it's going to be intense no matter what. It's either going to be intensely, you know, great or intensely scary or intensely depressing or intensely, you know, uplifting. I don't want a boring life. So you might as well have, you know, an intense life and the courage to appreciate it.
And all this will be on display at the Henry Fonda Theater.
There you go.
The man is a pro!
Tuesday. Come one, come all.
So on the flip side of that, when we're talking about like, oh, only 10 people show up. So as a punk band, was it ever odd when like shit tons of people started showing up?
Okay, good question. I just did Rock in Rio 2 or 3 weeks ago. 250,000 people.
Jesus
watching. So it's definitely different confronting that compared to a club. You know, it's not as intimate, and I am so happy to be back playing 500, 600, 700 people a night in the venues that we chose. And I mean, I have nothing against these huge festivals and these outdoor things, but I understand why a lot of musicians like to be in a smaller place again. Because you learn from each capacity, you know, how to
you know, it's a learning process. It never ends.
Yeah.
How you perform in front of different kinds of masses.
Yeah.
You know, so that was pretty unusual. I couldn't even see the end of the crowd. Oof.
I guess that's probably a little more acceptable for music, but with if you have a massive crowd, but it's sort of funny with I have to relate everything back to comedy, and I apologize, but that's okay. Just what I know.
It's a mad world.
But there's a point where, you know, because there's a lot of some comics will do like Madison Square Garden or whatever, and there are not many people can do it, but some do.
Right.
And I'm sort of like, why would you? I mean, I'm sure you get paid a lot of money, but why wouldn't you do more shows in a smaller venue?
Because it Beacon Theater.
Yeah, exactly. It just needs to be. You know, I feel like when you start getting above 1,000 people. Then it's not really about the show anymore because it's people can get distracted
and
if they're not then it's an event and it's not, you know, and then you can't really connect with people as much.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that too, especially in Rock and Rio, Lollapalooza, all those things. You know, you could be playing, and then there's a guy walking around with a newspaper and a cup of coffee, talking to the phone. So a lot of the time, they're not really there to listen to the music. They're there to maybe pick up a girl. A girl's there to pick up a guy. So it's like a small city of what they're doing, like what everyone else does, you know?
Yeah.
So every venue's different.
What's your favorite venue? If you can say, do you have like a favorite venue?
Well, New York was always great. It is always great to play. Tokyo. I'm naming cities now. You know,
because
South America, Argentina, Brazil, really cool. Greece, Athens, Barcelona, Spain. China was unbelievable. Beijing. And it's just unbelievable. It's so westernized now. It's just it just comes out of the woodwork.
It's crazy.
Again, Russia.
Wow.
Whole new ball game there now, you know. So it's different everywhere, really.
Since you've been around the world a bunch of times now with music, like, do you still get excited when you're going to a city and
try
to make it in the schedule so you have time to at least enjoy it?
Yeah, you see these things as a young teenager in postcards. Yeah. You go, I'd like to go there. Or you on TV, you see a movie, you know. Spy film, a guy's in Zurich or he's in London. Go, boy, I'd love to go there, see Big Ben and everything else, you know, the Thames and all that stuff, you know. So, that was one of the reasons, too, because I really wanted to travel a lot and just see places.
That's right.
Can I also just say that as a young, like, I'm sure young people are like, yeah, man, fucking rock and roll, you used to sleep all day and you fucking get fucked up on it. You guys are both in really good shape. You would have to be in decent shape to maintain the shows and the lifestyle. Yeah. Like 35
just,
songs.
Even just a Ramones like set is just it's nonstop.
It's
nonstop.
It's very athletic.
Yeah.
It's that style of music. There's all different kinds. I mean, you can play mellow music and you'll have a mellower physique, I guess.
If you're gonna stay in bed all day and whatever. You're not going to be able to do this because you have to be in good shape. You have to tour. You got to fly. You got to go to hotels. You got to do interviews. You got to do the show. So there is ultimately stress levels that you have to deal with, but it's how you deal with them.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And have you gotten better at that over the years, do you think?
Yeah. I remember the first time. I mean, I'd been in bands and played shows since, you know, I guess elementary school and things like that. It was always just what we would do for fun, music and record. But actually going on tour as the Andrew WK for the first time, we played in England. And I remember after the very first show we played, it was actually a very mild tour in terms of the schedule. It was very comfortable. We were on a bus and we only had played two shows and we have a day off or sometimes 2 days off. I couldn't imagine doing another show at all after that first one, let alone that we had to do it again the next night.
Yeah.
I was completely overwhelmed. But then, you build up a level of it's almost like a reserve strength, but also just the adrenaline. And what happens is now it's harder to stop than it is to keep going. It takes more energy to come down from this way of life than it is to even maintain now, because you have to have this constant adrenaline level, like Marky said, just to even go through the traveling, let alone performing. And once it's on, you get hooked and you don't want it to stop. You don't want to come down from it.
No, you really have to learn how to be like a master economist with your energy, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to manipulate, because, you know, like it's easy to see why people go get super fucked up after shows, because you're just like this.
They want to come down.
Yeah, they want to come down, or they just want to feel. It's just having to deal with that. It's a very weird thing to do. Performing is a very strange, it's a weird anomaly in our culture. It's a strange thing to do, and I'm sure people think, oh, you go on stage and then that's it. You're like, you still got to deal with that shit. You have to process that experience. Your brain's got to...
Very overwhelming.
Yeah.
Very emotional. And it's strange. You'll feel very sad.
Isn't that weird?
Even after the biggest... Always after the biggest, best shows, when I would feel the most... It's not even sad. Like, my mood is sad. It's... You know what I think it is? And I think this is a very important way to think about depression in general. Not for everybody, but in a lot of cases, all depression is your soul trying to absorb the actual physical experience that you just went through. And it's trying to muster up the strength and space inside your own brain, basically, to say this life experience just happened. And I think it's what we would call a come down or whatever. It's the only way your body can process the life as you're living it. And I used to get really upset and freaked out when that feeling would come and almost feel guilty. Like, why am I feeling down or depressed or sad? I have no right to feel this way. Now I just don't take it seriously because I know it's just my body. It's like trying to digest life.
Yeah.
You know, and apply it so you can absorb it into your actual being.
That's really smart. When you can recognize that your body and your brain have patterns and you go, oh, that's just that thing.
Exactly.
Then you feel a little like, ah, that's just the thing I go through.
Exactly.
But I have always thought that, not in the cases of chemical depression, but just in the cases of like, oh, I feel sad or depressed. I've always sort of looked at depression as like excitement without an outlet. It's sort of like excitement that's trapped and you can't express it, so it just sort of flips over, and then it sort of flips over to the negative of like, I wanted to be able to do this thing, and now I can't, and I feel empty and weird, and it's like
it's just weird. That's what it is. It's a very bizarre physical sensation. It's less of a mood. It feels more like a physical feeling.
Yeah.
And again, like I'm someone who have had all different kinds of moods, and so I've always sought out things that made me feel cheered up, and assume that that's why most other people were doing them. You know, even if you listen to angry music, it still feels good, or music that's about what we might call negative things, it's still uplifting. So you just want to be around that and saturate yourself with cheerful stuff.
It's also if you're someone who's hyper aware of yourself and things, then you can also have that experience where you're doing something that you always dreamed of. And in your head, you're going, is it it? Is this it? Is it happening right now? What am I supposed to be feeling? Should I be happier? Should I be sad? What am I supposed to be? It's like you get so hyper aware of the situation that I find that a lot of the things I sort of have to go back and retroactively go, oh, that really was an amazing experience. Because at the time, you're just not, you don't know what the fuck you're supposed to be doing or thinking.
You just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. And now we have doctors dispensing all these pills for these depressions. You know, so which I'm totally against. You know, it's up to the individual, but it's funny. You know, when I was young, a doctor would say, this is what you need. Now, a lot of people going, this is what I want.
Oh, that's a good point.
And the doctor goes, okay, you can have it. You know?
Well, I definitely think, you know, there are definitely some people who are helped by medication and stabilizing, and like people who really are chemically, who do have imbalances in the brain. But I think most people...
it's an easy out.
It is sort of an easy, like, I should just take that.
It's like I stubbed my toe, I'll take 3 Xanax.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
You know what I mean?
I like this logic.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, come on.
Or again, just that we don't have to get too caught up. Like, what we think of as not feeling good, maybe that's not even that bad. Maybe these kinds of moods, whatever expectations, that's what I changed in my own brain over the years. I don't really feel differently or better more of the time. I just feel better about not feeling that great certain times and just understand that's part of the process.
Yeah.
And to appreciate the whole thing. being alive is a positive experience by its very nature. You know what I mean? You're in the red, or is it in the black?
You're in the black.
You're in the black because you're existing, you know? So with that, why not, again, savor the whole range of flavors, even the ones that maybe are a bit bitter or a bit, you know, scary or whatever. I don't want to have a one-dimensional life or just feel the same way all the time. You want to feel fully alive, you know? And as humans, we can have all these different feelings and have the ability, like you're saying, to be aware of them and appreciate them.
Well, it's easy to forget that when you're feeling and when you're feeling negatively, you know, you kind of, your brain is very, it's very narrow. Like, you forget, oh, this will pass. Like, it's not, I've felt this before and it's been okay, you know, ultimately.
It's like your first girlfriend.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If your best friend takes her away from you, you know, the other girls.
Yeah.
But then you have to realize, well, later in life, you realize it wasn't that important.
Mm-hmm.
But it did pass.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Well, that's just that's just our baby brains. Like,
that's right.
What are these things called feelings and emotions?
Exactly.
And it was all valuable. I mean, that, appreciating even bad relationships, there was some value there. Even the time, you know, there's always some good time, even in the worst, like any bad friendship or, you know, business problems or stress. And I've been dealing with things, you know, constantly like anyone else, where it's very hard to see the silver lining, but even the worst experience has something to offer.
Or how many times have you gone through something and you go, oh, this is, I can't believe this is the worst. And then, you know, a year later you go, holy shit, if I didn't have that experience, I wouldn't be where I, you know, I wouldn't have had this. So you know, you look back and you go, it sucks that I went through that, but it was kind of a weird gift.
It was the path.
Yeah, it was the path.
Road, you know, there's ups and downs on the roller coaster, but once you're locked in, the ride's going to take you where it's supposed to go.
And as long as you kind of say to yourself, like, well, the path doesn't have an end point, that it's just, you just continue along the path, you know, as forever, then I think that, to me, is kind of comforting, because it doesn't feel like, oh, there's a some point I have to get to. It's just, no, it's just a series of little checkpoints, and then, but you keep going.
And you get cooler and cooler as you go.
You hope so.
Yeah. and that leads to the Henry Fonda Theater.
Well, and bring it back all around, unfortunately, this podcast does have an end point, and we've just about reached it. Yeah, we're almost at an hour.
Whoa.
So nice talking to you guys, though. See, when you've had done as many of these as you have, you do have this internal sort of...
That's very good. It was very in depth. It was good talking about all this.
Oh, it's been really, it's really great. And then seeing the two of you guys, you know, together and sort of, you know, where you are in your careers, but coming together to, you know, to make this familiar but new thing at the same time. It's kind of, it's cool. It's really cool.
It's working.
I want to end this with. I was reading about you on the internets last night, Andrew, and you the list of your band names is one of my favorite things.
Oh wow!
Seen.
I thought you were going to bring up the internet rumors that there are many different Andrew WKs.
What? Is that a rumor?
Yes. Have you ever heard?
That's the only way I was able to form all these different bands.
Yeah.
Right now, there's another Andrew WK doing WTF again, and then another Andrew WK. Yeah.
You know, that's the great thing about bands is coming up with a name. It's the hardest thing, but also one of the most fun things. So this is probably, you know, the total about 20, 25 different people just rotating.
But these
almost
are...
for the sake of coming up with a new band name. I mean, sometimes that would be just the very reason to.
But is that done on purpose to dilute?
What, the quality?
Dilute who we are, or is
yeah.
it
all the band names?
No, your name or my name or anyone's name. You know,
and so it's an index. It's a way to locate someone
to
on
have
the map.
Like, you know, 20 names that are the same. Like, say, Marky Ramone times 20, and there's only one. I mean, is it there purposely to dilute who you are, or is it just, what is it?
I agree with you. I think it's an experiential index where you look at a thing and you go, oh, that is that thing that feels like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's always ways to get there, and here's another path.
But I really do like these names. I mean, like, each one of them I like, and they all have totally different vibes. There's Slam, Reverse Polarity, Lab Lobotomy, The Pterodactyls, Music Band.
Yep, I played drums in that for a short
time. Mr. Velocity Hopkins.
No, that's an actual gentleman. So that was a band that he formed, but his name was Mr. Velocity Hopkins, so I can't take credit for that one.
Cathode, The Portly Boys, Kangoo, The Beast People, Stormy Rodent, a later iteration of Scheme.
Stormy Rodent.
The Malt Lickers, Isis and the Werewolves, and Sucking Coeds.
Yep. Some of those names I made up, and many of them I didn't. So I was just fortunate enough to be around, these very creative people, and they showed me that you can make up a great band name.
And eventually you were just like, I guess it'll just be my name.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, and, you know, you had someone to say, what's in a name?
But it is sort of funny. That's like, and I think that right there, and I think this is a good place to stick the landing, is that that is a very interesting metaphor for life, of where, you know, you're searching all around for the perfect thing, and then in the end you find out it's you.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like you find out, you search everywhere outside, and then you're like, oh, maybe I'm the thing. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I should find myself.
Yeah, I changed my name. I had to when I joined the Ramones.
Yeah, that's sort of part of
it. It was Mark Bell. That's my real name. Then we were tossing around names. And we came up with Marky Ramone because of a serial character from the 60s named Marky Mapo, which was a popular serial along with Farina and Wheatina. And he was the main spokesman, this little cowboy cartoon kid. So and my grandmother used to call me Marky, so that's how I got that, you know. Oh, wow. So who knows where his band's members got the names from, you know.
Well, not a serial kid. That's a fucking great story.
I bought the doll on eBay.
Oh, wow. What? You have it?
It sits there staring at me with Marky on his cowboy hat. But you know what? I think of my grandmother when I see that, and I go, oh. You know.
Wow.
Yeah, we didn't. She didn't particularly like the loud bashing of the drumming.
It's not grandma music.
Talking, you know, pretty heavy negativity there. But anyway, you know, I overcame that. So, you know.
And then, of course, in the late '80s with Marky Mark, you're like, you son of a bitch.
Whatever. You know, who came first? You know, the egg or the chicken?
or the cereal?
Or whatever. Cereal, definitely. Cereal came first.
Thank you so much for being here. So your show is actually this is going up. What's the date tomorrow? Is the
15th? Yeah.
Okay, so this is going up the 15th. So the show is Tuesday the 15th at the Fonda Theater here in Los Angeles. And really wonderful chatting with you guys. I didn't, you know, we never know which direction these chats are going to go in, but I absolutely was delighted.
Could go on for another hour or two.
We could, yeah. But we're going to release you back into the wild.
We're going to go to Cantor's and have some chop liver.
Oh, yeah, nice!
There you go.
Cool.
Cherry phosphate.
You know. Good to see you guys. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy your burrito.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.